out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radioarian.com.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Tuesday, the 26th of March, 2019, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at radioarian.com. Well, we've got a continuation of a news story that we covered last week to begin with today, and that's the Senegalese Negro who tried to set fire to 51 Italian schoolchildren. He tried to kill 51 schoolchildren who were luckily only saved because one of them was able to use his mobile phone and call his mother. They were all handcuffed on this bus, and the bus was soaked in gasoline. Luckily, the police got there just in time as the bus went up in flames and pulled the children out. And we reported on this last week. And not only did the BBC claim that it was an Italian that had done this, they also said that, in fact, other reports also said that this was a protest. It was a protest against Africans dying in the sea. And that's not accurate either. The guy said that this was in revenge for the Africans that had died in the sea. Nothing to do with a protest. It was revenge. It was murder. He wanted to murder 51 Italian schoolchildren. And this week, he's said that he'd do it again. Not just that he would do it again, but that he would do it again 100 times. And again, this is just not being reported anywhere. I actually got this from Breitbart. Senegalese background, a Sinu Sai, who attempted to light 51 Italian schoolchildren on fire this week, says he felt no remorse and would do the act again 100 times over. Well, why would he feel any remorse? The only reason why Negroes would feel remorse for anything is if they were locked up. And then they think, well, I'd rather not be locked up. But they don't actually have compassion in the same way that white people have compassion. They don't have words for ideas like that in the African languages. It's not a thought that occurs to them. The bus driver who handcuffed the children poured liquid over the seats of the bus and tried to set them all on fire in revenge for migrant drownings in the Mediterranean, which are actually declining, told Italian magistrates that he would not apologise for the act. Il Giornale reports. Repent? No repentance. It was something I had to do, and I would do it again 100 times. Why did I do that? To send a signal to Africa. Africans have to stay in Africa, Sai said. Well, I certainly agree with that last part of his sentence there. Yes, Africans should stay in Africa. It's entirely Africans' own fault if they are drowning in the Mediterranean while they attempt to invade Europe illegally, break the law, break in. It's as if a burglar was trying to break into somebody's house and then complaining that they fell off the ladder and blaming the householder that they had fallen off the ladder. It's nothing to do with Europeans if Africans drown in the sea while attempting to break the law, is it? According to his lawyer, David Lacini, Sai showed signs of not being mentally stable, having accepted the consequences for his actions without hesitation. But if he was mentally unstable, if he had some kind of mental problem, how come he was a bus driver? How come he was able to hold down his job? How come his employers said that there had been no issues whatsoever with his driving? They said he was an absolutely fine employee. And yet they're trying to argue here in the court that he's mentally unstable because he shows no repentance for wanting to kill 51 white kids. And the only reason why we think that is mentally unstable is because we project our own characters onto them. We project our own ideas onto them. We say, well, we would feel remorse at that. We would feel terrible at doing something like that. But of course, we have the golden rule. We have the golden rule, which is do unto others as you would have done unto you. And again, that is not something that ever made an appearance in Africa. Something which white people develop themselves, I would suggest, as children. They realize that it's not nice to have things done to, certain things aren't nice being done to them, so why would you want to do them to other people? It's a sign of the conscience that we have. And as I say, it's the golden rule. And there's no evidence of it anywhere at all in Africa, and yet people project it onto Negroes and expect them to show remorse at things like this. And this guy is just being honest. And because he's being honest, we are saying, well, he must be mad. He must be mad. And that must be the reason why he did this. No, he just did this because it seemed logical to him. Because that's the way Negroes think. I mean, you just have to look at Africa, look at the history of the place, look at the way that if somebody gets stolen from a village by the neighboring village, they don't go then and get the person back from that neighboring village. They then go and attack another village, a random village that has nothing to do with it. And then that random village then goes and attacks another random village. And the whole of Africa is set on fire like this. That's what the early reports say was happening there. It defies all logic, the way that they think. Well, it defies the white man's logic, because they're not white. The lawyer said, in my opinion, he gave serious signs of imbalance, and the way the investigating judge had to carry out the interrogation was aimed at verifying this aspect, he said. Sai is currently being held at San Vittore Prison, where he was welcomed by other inmates throwing oranges and eggs and refusing to allow him to sleep. Good. More information has been revealed on Sai's past, including that in 2010 he sexually attacked a 17-year-old girl. Bear in mind, this guy is now driving a school bus and he has a record of sexual attack against a minor. While his lawyer at the time attempted to play the incident off as less than touching, Sai was actually sentenced to a year in prison for the sexual assault. So it was obviously quite a serious sexual assault for him to be jailed for a year. I mean, over here in Britain, we have people that have been found guilty of rape that haven't even been jailed. So this was a serious sexual assault, and yet he was still allowed to get a job working with children. At another point in his criminal history, he was also caught driving while under the influence of alcohol and was fined €680 and had his driving license suspended for 6 months. I mean, this is the worst possible person you could think of to employ as a school bus driver. Not just because he's black, but because he is a drunkard and a child molester. A drunk driver and a child molester. And the parents who are trusting their children to that school, trusting the school to do what's best for the children and do background checks on the people that they employ, and they've allowed this to happen. The cases had previously been alluded to by Italian Deputy Prime Minister, Minister of the Interior and League leader Matteo Salvini, who questioned how Sai had been hired as a bus driver with that kind of record in his past. Why aren't we hearing about this on the BBC? Why isn't this news throughout Europe? Why do we only find it at the Breitbart site? I mean, this is very important that this has happened. Despite Sai claiming that his motive was the drownings of migrants in the Mediterranean under the populist coalition government of Salvini's Liga and the Five Star Movement, actual data shows that drownings have significantly reduced under the tougher maritime border policy enacted last year. So Matteo Salvini has shown that you can prevent the invasion of Europe. 95% of all invaders setting foot on Italian soil have been prevented. There's 95% less happening now. And because of that, there are less drownings. This nonsense that if we don't go out there and rescue them, if we don't provide a taxi service for them, then they're all going to die. That's nonsense. They've stopped trying to make it to Italy because they know that they're not going to be picked up. No longer is there a taxi service. This is the way to deal with it. And this nonsense that you can't do this if you're part of the EU. I mean, he's shown that. He's shown that you can do this. You can't do this because of United Nations treaties. Again, he's shown that that's a load of nonsense. It's if there's a will, there's a way. Our government here in Britain could prevent any illegal immigration into the country very easily. And they refuse to. And Salvini has shown them all up, has shown up all these white leaders that claim that they can't stop illegal immigration. He's just proved that they are all lying. Well, let's move back to Britain for the next story. And this is confirmation of something that we've been saying for a long time. But of course, the authorities are still denying it. And this is to do with the grooming gangs, with the Muslim grooming gangs. The victim of a Bradford grooming gang has said that most girls at the children's care home where she lived were being sexually exploited and has called for an inquiry, alleging that child rape gangs across the country, including in Rochdale and Rotherham, are linked. Well, of course they're linked. The linking factor between them is that they're all Islamic. They're all Muslims that are involved in this. This is what stares you in the face when you look at this, is that they're all Muslim. It's not the fact that they're all Pakistani. If you look at the rape gangs in Holland, they're all Moroccan. If you look at the rape gangs in Finland, they're all Somalian. It's Islam that is the connecting factor here. And also we see that it's brothers, uncles, fathers. They're all related together. And people that say, oh, yes, well, paedophilia occurs in white society as well. It doesn't occur in white society between all the members of a family and all their friends, because if the members of the family or the friends were to find out, they would beat the hell out of the person that was doing it. I mean, this shows that this is not frowned upon. It's not frowned upon, at least by a sizable section of the Islamic community thinks that this is okay. Otherwise, they would be shopping the people that are doing it. Otherwise, they would be attacking the people that are doing it, and they're not attacking them. Quite clearly, they provided support for them. All the while these grooming gangs were going on, it wasn't the Islamic community that was saying, hey, there's a big problem here. We've got members of our community that are grooming and raping these young white girls. It wasn't the Muslims that brought that to the public's attention. It was nationalists that brought it to the public's attention. It was the BNP. It was Tommy Robinson that did this. And then years later, decades later, it was finally exposed by an inquiry. And now this girl who was one of the victims, she's pointing out the fact that this was going on all over the country, and it was all the children in the care home that she lived in. Now you think about that. Those children that are put into care, a lot of them are put into care because they've been sexually abused. They've been put into care because they're supposed to be safer in the care home than they would have been at home with their family. And here they are being turned into sex slaves by Muslims, and nobody believed them. I mean, the care homes themselves must have gone along with this. They must have said, well, this is okay. How could that have happened? How could it have happened that the care homes allowed this to happen when they're performing the role of surrogate parents? And we know that social services were involved in this. It wasn't social services that blew the whistle on this and said, this is going on. The social services were acting in tandem with the Muslims in some cases. allowing them to go out, allowing them to get involved with these people. Do the social services now in the children's care homes, do they warn them about Muslim rape gangs? I doubt it very much. They would be accused of being racist if they do that. There was a film that in Holland that warned the school children about Islamic rape gangs, and it was banned in Britain. It was banned from being shown to children over here in Britain. Fiona Goddard, this is the victim, she told BBC Look North, "I lived in a care home, and I know that most of the girls, barring about three, were all getting sexually exploited as well. I also met numerous girls while we were out with other guys that maybe didn't come from care homes, but came from broken backgrounds, and they were all being exploited. On the extent and organisation of the abuse," she said, "when I was at that house where she was raped, people came from Birmingham, Rochdale, Rotherham, Blackburn, Glasgow, Oxford. It is widespread and they are all linked. There definitely needs to be a public inquiry and it needs to be an independent one," she added. So there's your proof of it, that this is all linked up. This is all connected. All those places there, that's all over the country. That's even including Scotland. All those places have had grooming gang trials, and there's nothing being said about the fact that they are all linked up together. We're supposed to look at this as if these events occur in complete isolation, and it's just bad luck that there are a few bad eggs in the Islamic society that do this. And that is just not the truth. It's sex slavery on an industrial scale that's going on here, and it's still being covered up. It's incredible. Bradford Council's interim child services chief, Gladys Rhodes White, said of Miss Goddard's call for an inquiry, "I'm not seeing any evidence that there is a wide-scale, large issue specific to Bradford." I mean, how can she say that, that she's not seeing any evidence of this, that there's a wide-scale, large issue, when we have these rape gangs appearing in all the large multicultural centres of Britain? Of course it's wide scale. She's trying to say that this is in isolation. This is an isolated group of quote unquote men that carried this out without any links to anywhere else. And she's got the victim here, one of the main witnesses in one of these large trials that found them all guilty, telling her that this was all linked up with all these other places. And she's saying, "I'm not seeing any evidence for that." So they're still trying to cover it up. She said, "I think if it did come to light that there were lots of victims that had been missed," she added, "it would be something the safeguarding board would want to look at." So she's basically like, she's not interested in it at all. Miss Goddard came forward with her complaint in 2014. That's 5 years ago she came through with this complaint, after seeing a report on the abuse of more than 1,500 girls in Rotherham, and warned that while some rape survivors had gone to the police, there are girls that either lack the understanding or aren't in the situation where they can come forward. I mean, a lot of these girls, they get them hooked on heroin, and that's it. They're stuck on heroin for the rest of their lives. They can't come forward, and they're just going to be looked at as junkies and junkie prostitutes. I mean, these girls are looked at as children, and the Muslims looked at it as pedophiles at first when the kids are under the age of 16. But then once they're over 16 and they're hooked on heroin, then they just become prostitutes for these gangs. And that's how they get looked at. The young woman waived her lifelong right to anonymity to discuss her case and reach out to other potential victims of grooming gangs. I mean, this is a brave girl that's done this. A very brave girl, and I hope she gets support. She's the sort of person that Tommy Robinson should be interviewing, because I think she'll find a much more sympathetic ear there than from the government. And she's right, there does need to be an inquiry into how all these gangs are linked up. These things don't happen in isolation. But of course, if they do an inquiry and it does show that they're all linked up, then, of course, it's they won't want that. That will upset the Islamic community. They will see that as tarring the whole community there. But that's what the fact is. I mean, we'll see something similar in this final news story that I'm going to discuss now. This one actually comes from Germany. Authorities in a district of rural Germany covered up a long list of asylum seeker crimes, including rape, assault, and child sex abuse, so as not to stir up prejudice, it has been alleged. Now, how can it be prejudice if there is a long list of asylum seeker crimes, including rape, assault, and child sex abuse? It's not prejudice to then be concerned about asylum seekers, is it? It's reality. I mean, it would be prejudice if they'd all been found innocent of these crimes and then people were still treating them as if they were likely to carry out these crimes. That would be prejudice. But this is post-Judas. This isn't prejudice. This is post-Judas. These people have been found guilty of their crimes. So it's not the right word to use to say that it's stirring up prejudice. Internal police figures revealed 117 criminal offences took place at refugee housing in Bustedt, northern Germany, during the last 3 months, and that third world migrants housed in other accommodation in the municipality were listed as suspects in a further 23 crimes. And of course, this is a very small area that this is happening in. But officers neglected to announce the incidents after orders from the Interior Ministry instructing police that active notifications from the force's press office on potential migrant involvement in crimes would be irresponsible and likely to stir up prejudice. Local media reports. What is irresponsible is not telling the public that there is this threat living among them, not making them aware of the potential for theft, rape, assault, and child sex abuse from these people, because it's those people that are doing it. They need to be warning the general public about this so that they can avoid them, not telling them, oh, we're all the same and you should be being overly friendly to them and welcoming them into Germany, because that just puts decent German people in the situation where they could be raped, assaulted, or abused. According to the regional daily Lübecker Nachrichten, none of the offences in question were immigration related, and instead, the long list of crimes consisting of assaults, some of which were carried out with weapons, rape, threats, property damage and theft, along with a number of particularly serious cases, including the reported sexual abuse of a 9-year-old girl in February. So the newspapers have been lying about it completely and saying that none of these offences were immigration related. Bustedt has seen crime rise since the advent of the migrant crisis in 2015, with the 4,600 population municipality hosting 1,369 asylum seekers as of January 2019. So the population of the place increased by 25%. Suddenly, foreigners are making up 1 in 4 of the population. The number of offences carried out at migrant accommodation has more than doubled almost every year since Chancellor Angela Merkel opened the German borders, with 343 crimes recorded last year, up from 33 in 2015 to 69 the following year, then to 126 in 2017. So the number of crimes is doubling every year now that they've got these foreigners living there. Among the total number of crimes recorded last year were 2 cases of murder or manslaughter, 2 incidents involving crimes against life, and 4 recorded sex offences, in addition to 28 drugs-related crimes and 61 incidents of theft. In the town of Bustedt itself, crime surged almost 75% in the last year. So it almost doubled in the last year, coinciding with these invaders being put up in accommodation there, with the number of offences rising from 207 to 360. So there was hardly any offences when this started. You think there was 33 offences in 2015, which is when the invaders arrived, and now there's 360 occurring. I mean, that's actually 10 times as much crime is now happening there within 4 years, once they made 25% of the population non-white. According to the Hamburger Abendblatt, which reports that the number of thefts skyrocketed from 68 to 167 over the period. So it's all crime, basically. Theft, assault, rape, drugs. All gone up from just 33 crimes into 2015. Since the beginning of the migrant crisis, German authorities have been dogged on several occasions by accusations that police forces in the country had been ordered to downplay or cover up crimes committed by newcomers. In Thuringia, for example, regional media outlets reported that officers were instructed not to produce press releases in the case of crimes carried out at asylum centres. How do you think that looks to the people in the asylum centres? They see that if they commit crimes, the police have been instructed not to tell people about it. It's like giving them a free pass to do this. Imagine football supporters in Britain had been told that if they committed any crimes, the police had been instructed not to tell the press about it, just to pretend that the crimes aren't happening. I mean, it's just illogical, isn't it, that anything like that would ever take place? And yet, this is what's taking place in Germany, and it's taking place all over Europe. And yet, just that news story that we began with today about the Senegalese setting fire to the 51 schoolchildren, that's been covered up in Britain, and it's probably been covered up in other European countries. So this isn't just happening in Germany. It's probably happening more than elsewhere in Germany because of the nature of the country and because it's occupied by the Allies still. But this is going on everywhere. Police union representatives who described a situation in which officers were called out to every refugee shelter almost every day complained that migrant crime was being systematically concealed. However, the state's far-left premier, Bodo Ramelow, denied the allegations. Of course, this is what the left do. They just deny the very reality that everybody sees around them. They think the way to deal with this problem is to prevent people from blowing the whistle on it and pointing out that there is a problem. It's like thinking the way to put a fire out is to just switch the fire alarm off and ignore it. And the hotter it gets and the more damage is caused and the more people are getting burned alive, you just get harsher and harsher on the people that are pointing it out and saying, look, it's time to call the fire brigade. You must call the fire brigade. And locking up the people that are saying, look, there's a fire happening and it needs to be put out. I mean, this is what this is. There's a fire happening in Europe that needs to be put out. And the authorities are silencing the people pointing that out. They're trying to prevent people from doing their best to put the fire out peacefully. And instead, they're guaranteeing that Europe is going to be engulfed in flames one day. I mean, France is already in flames. Just look at what is happening there, and that's being covered up. Exactly what we are told that President Assad was doing to his people, exactly what we were told that Gaddafi was doing to his people, Macron is doing to his people. He's got the army on the streets. He's got people firing on his own citizens. And yet there's no UN resolutions for a no-fly zone over Paris. The hypocrisy is just amazing. And what's even worse is that they think people don't notice it. They think people won't notice it if they silence the people pointing it out. Nobody will notice. It's crazy. That doesn't mean that nobody will notice. It means that people will think that there's no hope left. And they'll go out and do crazy, stupid things like Brendan Tarrant did. That's the end result of censorship. not the end of any problems. Problems don't go away just by not talking about them. They just get worse. It's like when you're told, you know, if you've got something wrong with you, you've got to go to see the doctor. It's not going to go away just by ignoring it. And the problems of diversity are not going to go away by ignoring them either. Okay, thank you very much for listening today. I will be back tomorrow with Carolyn Yeager. God bless and hail victory.
You're tuned in to Radio Aryan at radioaryan.com.